The Guitar Radio Show, the show dedicated to the guitar player, guitar maker, gear builder, and purveyors of such items that you may not know about, but should. Here's your host, Mark Davin.
All right, folks, welcome back to Guitar Radio Show, and the Ice Queen has returned to Guitar Radio Show with a new record. We had talked about it last time that she was on the show, and we were waiting for it, and she actually was just planning it last go around, but it is finally out. It is the Ice Queen, and we have with us Ms. Sue Foley. How are you, Sue?
I'm really good. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, our pleasure. It's always an honor to have you around, and love the record. It's just fantastic.
Thank you.
Right now, it's in the top 10. It's in our top 10 over here in regards to releases for 2018.
Oh, wow. Thanks so much.
For sure.
Right.
It's such a great record. So what I was hoping to do is go ahead and do a track by track with you on this. And I know you're touring right now in support of this record. And it's been pretty much, planning, then recording the record. And was it Indiegogo or a GoFundMe? What did you do for this record? Was it an
Indiegogo?
What did you do for this?
It was
a funding thing. What was it? GoFundMe? What was it?
Oh, it was Kickstarter.
Kickstarter, that's it.
So crowdfunding, yeah, that was really important in raising the money for this album because it was it's a high end album.
Yeah.
We'll talk about everybody that's on it, but yeah, we needed to raise close to $50,000. I mean, in the end, we raised almost $40,000. We were aiming at 27, so we went over our goal. And in the end, I think it might have even cost me another $10,000 on top of that. I mean, it's a high end product, and I think that shows in the quality of it. We recorded it really well, mixed it, and it's mastered really well by the best. And of course, all those great musicians that are on it. So.
Yeah.
And that's what it takes.
Yeah, I'm telling you, we were happy to be part of it as far as the crowdfunding thing, and it was...
Absolutely.
And it was,
Thank you.
Oh, our pleasure. We just were so thrilled to be involved in any way we could.
You were a great cheerleader. I really appreciate it here. it really, really... All that made such a big difference to me. It was such a profound experience, the way people came to just want to be a part of it.
Oh yeah,
that really
sure.
was so important.
Yeah, when you and Mike Flanagan sat down to start working this record out, he's your producer on this record, and he also plays the B3 on this record. When you guys were deciding, was it much of a discussion as to what studios you were going to use, or you kind of
had? Mike did the footwork. He kind of went around in Austin and, of course, he knows probably most of the studios, and he knew what he wanted. He really wanted to record it live. He wanted us all in one room.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted it to be sort of an authentic sounding blues record where, all the sounds are bleeding into one another, and we're responding in time to one another because we were playing live together.
Right.
So we settled on the Fire Station in San Marcos. which is actually owned by, you know, the Texas State University, who runs the recording program out of it now. But it has, like, one great big room, huge high ceilings, and it's got good recording equipment, and we said that's perfect. And just, you know, coincidentally, part of my very first album was recorded there, too. So I was not a stranger to that room. I had been there before.
Oh, that's great. So it was like coming home.
Yeah. Just another full circle story that, you know, this album has many of them, full circle sort of stories.
That's super cool. That is great. I didn't know that. That's great to know. I love those little tidbits. So let's jump into it. I got to tell you, when you said it was, you know, he really wanted to get an authentic record, and I was messaging him recently, and I told him, I said, you know, I said, people, you know, are clamoring after you to play B3 on their records and come and tour with them and everything else. But after this record, I think people are going to start looking at him and saying, hey, will you come produce my record? Because it's...
I think so, too.
It's so good. It's... There and you know, of course, it takes everything. It takes great songs, it takes great performances, and really great production. And you guys really were able to put it all together in one big package, and it really came out great.
Yeah, it really did. And Mike, you know, I think one of the reasons I hired Mike was because I heard his album, The Drifter, and I liked it so much. I loved, you know, the diversity of it. It's a great album. He's got a lot of special guests on it as well. But I just love the sound quality. I thought it really sounded good. And I thought, well, if he can do that, let's just do it.
Yeah.
I was, you know, I just thought that was such a great album.
Right on. Well, the track we heard on the way in is the first track on the record. We're going to go track by track, folks. So the first track on the record is a track called Come to Me. And I got to tell you, two of the sexiest voices in blues music today singing together on this. It's you and Charlie.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much.
So good. So good. Man, this track. Now, this track has got such a improvisational feel to it. Was this like a first or second take on this track or what?
I believe it was the first take. I think we cut it two or three times, and then we ended up going back. And so you can hear that we were all sort of, like I said, responding in time to each other. And Chris Layton is on the drums, of course. And, yeah, we were just, it was groovy. And, you know the shots are a little off sometimes, but this one just sort of had the vibe. They really wanted sort of, you know, a spooky kind of groovy vibe.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's, whenever I do these track by tracks, I try to sit with the record for a long time, take my notes, and then I try and go and I learn the tunes too. And
oh wow.
Yeah, because this way I get more of a feel of what you know what you're really doing. And this was fun, so much fun to play. This one and 81. And If I Have Forsaken You, holy cow. When we get to that, I got things I want to say. But, yeah, these are fun tracks to play. Really fun.
Thank you. And, it was fun for us, too. And Charlie Sexton is amazing on it. That slide guitar you hear, that slinky.
Yeah.
He is just such a intuitive musician. I mean, nobody heard the songs and knew the songs before we started playing them. I just would play the people, you know, everybody the song, here's the song, and then we cut it.
Right.
It's not like they had demos that they were working on or anything. They just came into the studio, I played them the two, and they're like, okay, let's do it. And that's pretty cool.
So, for you, did you use pretty much the same setup all the way through the record as far as your gear?
I think I did. I used what I generally use, which is a Fender Bassman 59 reissue with a reverb pedal. And the reverb pedal I was using was the Holy Grail. I've been using that for a long time. It was just like straight into the amp. Charlie's amp was in the same room. I forget what he was playing through, but he had a pretty big pedal board with a lot of magic tricks in it. I wish I knew what he was doing. and a couple of pretty cool guitars. He might have been on a Les Paul on that one. I can't exactly remember, but he has got some really good gear.
He does. He plays those Trussards and all sorts of crazy stuff.
He makes a lot of textures. That's really cool.
Yeah, that's what he is. Yeah, when I saw him with Dylan, it was all about textures. And then at the AMAs here in Austin, at the Moody, once again, he's all about the song. But at the same time, if he wants to, he could tear your head off with his guitar work. It's just incredible.
Yeah, he sure could.
Yeah.
He's a great musician.
On to track number two. It's called 81. What's the significance of that title?
81 is about Interstate 81, which runs from southern Ontario all the way down to Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, under Kingston, Ontario, you catch it, you go through the Great Lakes area, Lake Ontario, and then it goes down. It sort of follows the Appalachian Trail all the way down to Tennessee, and so it's about that road. And it just happens that road has one of the worst weather patterns on it. It's across. It's called Lake Effect, and it's got a really big precipitation pattern that I used to call it the Gates of Hell. So when I refer to the Gates of Hell in that song, that's what I'm talking about. because it was like a snowstorm, 6 months out of the year, and we had to drive through that.
Right.
And it's a pretty rough road. You can't really get off of it once you're on it, and there's nowhere else to go. So I was on that road a lot and driving from, Ontario to Tennessee, and because I was living between Ontario and Nashville. And, so it was just, kind of a horrendous highway to have to be on all the time. I it was sort of like my nemesis, so I just thought I'd write a song for it.
Yeah, your nemesis, but yet, in a way, your companion.
Well, the only one available. So you make the best of it. Just get a good song out of it.
Somebody once said, you dance with who you came with.
I guess so, yeah. I had no choice.
So you got Charlie on there again. Mike's on organ. Got Chris on drums. Chris Marish on Fender Bass. And Kyle Thompson on tambourine.
Yes.
So that leads me
great band.
Yeah, great band. That leads me to a question. Now, I know I'm coming to see you tomorrow night. Who's in the band now?
Tomorrow night will be Chris Marsh, same bass player. Kyle Thompson will be on Kit, because, you know, Chris Layton is on Kit on 81, and he's out with Kenny Wayne Shepherd.
Right.
Derek O'Brien will be on second guitar.
Oh, cool.
Tomorrow night.
I love Derek.
Yeah, me too. He's the best.
Oh, such a good guitar player. I love that Strat of his, too. Super cool.
Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Next track is called Run. Walk us through that.
Run is sort of like pretty raucous tune. It was one take. George Rains was on drums.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember who's on bass on that one.
You got John Bradley's on it. Johnny Bradley's on there, upright bass.
Johnny Bradley, yeah. Johnny Bradley, who plays with Gary Clark on bass. It was just like one take. I think George Rains played some amazing drums. I remember after the take, I said, George! I just shouted at George and he kicked it so hard. He really did a great job. And it's sort of almost rockabilly or low-down blues.
Yeah,
Mike Flanagan thought it was sort of like a Juke Boy Bonner tune. You know, it's just kind of pretty straight ahead, but it's a high energy thing. We, you know, it goes over live really well.
Yeah, and some of your leads are almost Dick Dale on there.
Yeah, there's not much lead work. It's more of just because it's so fast and raucous, and I'm trying to hold down because it's trio. I'm holding down the rhythm and everything, and I don't want to let that rhythm go. So I didn't do a lot on lead. I just kind of did some things that I could slam out,
right,
and not lose the bottom end.
Yeah,
I didn't do much, single note stuff on that.
Yeah, another fun one to jam to is Nikki V. That was
Thank
cool.
Thank you. Yeah,
lots of fun.
Fun for us too.
Is that in the set?
Yeah. Yeah. I play all these songs live, every one of them.
Really?
Yeah, because they're recorded live. So all the songs translate live. I feel really comfortable executing them anyway live, whether it's solo acoustic or trio or full, full five-piece or six-piece thing.
Well, that's another reason why I can't wait to see you tomorrow night to hear these tunes. Like Gaslight and If I Have Forsaken You live, I can't wait to hear this. This is going to be killer.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
Rolling. Far away from here,
evening from far away from here. Where the ground stays frozen more than half the year. I'm cool and I'm detached. They call me the Ice Queen. They say I'm cool and I'm detached. And all the men agree I'm too slippery to catch.
So here we go. We got the title track, "The Ice Queen." Where did this derive from?
Yeah.
Was this sort of like your inner Albert Collins trying to come out?
Well, not exactly on this song. I mean, the title of the whole album, "The Ice Queen," is threefold, and one of it is sort of a tip of the hat to Albert Collins, the Iceman, fellow Telecaster player. And
yeah.
Definitely one of my favorite guitar players. The Ice Queen song is more about, you know, it's a story about, you know, a woman who people call an Ice Queen.
Mm-hmm.
And what's going on with her and why she is the way she is, and maybe that people are, maybe might be misjudging her. So I would say it's a compassionate look at somebody who people think is cold and, you know, cut off from things, and why that would be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great slow blues. I think it goes over real well. Women seem to really relate to it.
Mm-hmm.
And guys, of course, love the guitar work.
So yep.
It goes over.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, that t-shirt you sent me, my wife promptly stole from me.
Get you another one.
No, that's fine. It's cool. She loves this record too, and she does love the title track. Absolutely.
Oh, that's great.
They never saw.
They couldn't see us for looking.
never saw us coming.
All right, the next track is called The Lucky Ones, and it's with JLV. Duet with JLV, Mr. Jimmy Vaughn.
Yeah.
So this track is this track is definitely got a real loose feel to it, real impromptu, you know, spur of the moment kind of thing. Even the lyrics feel that way. Give me a background on this.
So The Lucky Ones is, I'd written it, and we were, you know, when we heard that we could get Jimmy and that he wanted to be on the album, that just seemed like the perfect song, and so we thought a duet would be really sweet, and he agreed to that, and so we just cut the lyrics up. I originally sang it just by myself, and then we cut the lyrics up as two people, and it worked perfectly, and that banter back and forth, we really was very loose. We were, again, you know, he came into the studio and it's like, here's the song. And, you know, I'm not sure people even understand what that's like, but when you're playing with this kind of caliber of musician, they don't need to practice things. They just kind of hear it once and they're like, okay, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I get it. I know what to play.
Right.
And that's why you get people of that caliber, because, you know, when you're recording live, you can't mess around. You need everybody to know what to do. Of course, George Raines is on drums, and he just plays the perfect Texas shuffle.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, I think it's Mike's on B3 on that one, and
yep,
that really adds to the whole fun aspect of it. And it's just a fun song. It's upbeat. It's one of the happy songs on the album. Definitely upbeat. And it was really fun to record, and we were having fun with it, and you can tell.
Oh, it's such a great track. It you know, and when I first time I heard it, it immediately took me back to the jungle shows. You know, of like, oh, this makes total sense that this track would be on here and feel like this, because they have, you know, you have such a history with Jimmy and with George and with Mike, you know, and doing the jungle shows and stuff long before that. It just has a real natural vibe to it. I mean, the whole record does it.
Yeah,
know, but this really does.
There's really good chemistry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, it's very natural. You can't really fake that. It's chemistry, and it's there or it's not, and it worked, and I couldn't have been happier with the results. I mean, I could have been more thrilled than to have Jimmy Vaughn on my album, first of all.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, I can't, you know, there's nothing I can really say about that except wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just amazing. I'm a huge fan my whole life.
And, yeah.
Yeah, just to get his stamp of approval even is means so much to me.
For sure. Another thing about this record is, you know how, I mean, if you dip back, and you know better than anybody, if you dip back into some really old blues records, you know, stuff that came out 40s, 50s, early 60s, stuff before a lot of multi-tracking was going on, those records, like, you know, like Etta James stuff and early Muddy stuff, and when you listen to those records, there's this authenticity that lives in the grooves of those records. And the first time hearing this record, I felt like I was listening to one of those records. That's what
great.
It felt like to me. And hearing tracks like that, hearing tracks, you know, like 81 and I mean, Come to Me is definitely got a modern vibe to it because it's got that funk feel to it, you know. But The Lucky Ones, Ice Queen, Run, Gaslight, these tracks have that. It's almost like as if you start with Come to Me, it's like, okay, here's the record, modern vibe, modern feel, and all of a sudden it's like you took us back. And it was, in many respects, I've been turning it on to, turning this record on to people who have not heard it, and they go, wow, this really does sound like a vintage record.
Oh, nice.
So you know, I know that was Mike's intent as far as the production was concerned. Was that your intent with the writing of the tunes?
Not necessarily. I was just trying to tell a story and tell my story as honestly as I can. But I mean, I'm influenced by all that stuff back then still, probably more than new stuff. So I just can't help it. I still listen to early blues. I still listen to pre-war blues for inspiration. So I just think my sound just sort of reverberates back there, just because that's where my that's the stuff I really love.
Yeah,
not to say I don't love new stuff. I just I just love that stuff more.
It just resonates. Yeah,
it's pure to me.
Yeah, I can dig it. All right, the next track is Gaslight, another one of my favorites on the record. And we got J.J. Johnson on the drums, Kyle Thompson again on the tambourine, Chris Marisch on the upright bass, Elias Hasselinger on tenor sax, Ephraim Owens on the trumpet, Mike on organ, and you, of course, on vocals and guitar. Great lyric. I love this song, and I have known people that were gaslighters, so I can dig it.
Yeah, everybody does. That song goes over great because everybody relates. They say it's about people crazy.
Yeah, that's a been there, done that.
Yeah, it pretty much goes with the territory of just being here. So, yeah, and that's a completely live track. Everything you hear is right live off the floor. There's nothing. My vocals, the guitar, the saxophone, we were all in one room, and it was in the moment, and that's it. That's what we got.
And that was a first take?
I don't think it was one of the, we only did it two or three times, so it might have been the first one, it might have been the second, but I mean, we did that stuff really fast and live, and those guys again came in. It's like, here's the tune. We're like, okay, let's go.
Wow.
We did.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
It's super cool.
What a great track. Mm-hmm. I love it.
Thank you. I love it too. And that one goes over great live.
Oh man, cool.
Shine so bright in the ground, pick it up. What you found is fool's gold. Yeah, that's fool's gold. Just a dream that you hold, yeah.
I saw you do this at the last Jungle Show at Christmas time here at Antone's in Austin, and featuring Mr. Billy F. Gibbons on vocals and the harp. This one's key of F, I think, right? If I recall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got it.
And that was fun to play too. Real straight ahead, real simple, stripped down, and just gritty and good.
Yeah, this is an organ trio, so Mike Flanagan's playing the pedals for the bass. He's handling the bass duties, with Chris Layton on the drums, and me on guitar, and then Billy, and that's it.
Yeah, this is pretty much a Jungle Show right there.
It is. It is, just without Jimmy Vaughn.
That's right.
So, and Billy, you know, we were looking for a song to include Billy on the album, and this was actually one of our outtakes. We had done a demo of this, and then we pulled it back, and we said, no, this is the tune, because Billy is a huge Jimmy Reed fan, and this song kind of has that lazy shuffle.
Yeah.
Sort of harkens back to Jimmy Reed albums.
Yeah.
He kind of just ate it up.
Yeah, sort of like a...
When he stepped in, it just raised it to a whole other level. Let's put it that way. It was like, wow.
Yeah.
Then I had to step up. I was like, whoa. I got to find a better way or find a great way to match him. It was really he's such a great musician and so understated. I'm not sure people realize, really. I mean, I know he's legendary, but I mean, he is really an astute musician.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And quite a historian as well.
Yeah, really bright, interesting person. He's completely unique. What a fascinating person, really.
Yeah, I enjoy it. Like when I saw the three of you up there playing guitar, you, Billy, and Jimmy. It's always great when I know nobody's really trying to cut anybody's head, but there are times where you just take off and rip off some lines, and those two just kind of like you're not. I don't even know if you're noticing or not. You're probably not, but their eyes, you can see the whites of their eyes.
That's good. Most of the time when I play with them, I really just want to support them. And I'm in awe of both of them, so I don't want to get in anybody's way. But yeah, when they point to me and they want me to take off, I do. I don't mind doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm happy to just play behind them too.
Yeah.
They're both so special.
I love when Billy takes the handkerchief out of his pocket and just fans it over you. That's the best.
All right.
Oh, that's so
great.
Good. This is the track that just leaves me breathless every time I hear it. This is a track called If I Have Forsaken You. I'm telling you, if Etta James was alive, she'd be like, I need to record this track. That's how I feel.
I wish she was.
This record is great, but this is, to me, the pinnacle moment in this record for me.
Wow.
Tell me about this song. It's just marvelous.
Oh, well, thank you very much. And the song, I wrote the lyrics and the chord changes. It's a little different.
Yeah.
Than everything else. I had been listening, revisiting. While I was writing the tunes, I started revisiting, some of my favorite albums. And one of them was Bobby Blindland's Two Steps from the Blues.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that chord progression and what I was doing, that seeped into that, that type of song. And then when I played just a demo for Mike Flanagan, he said, oh, man, we got to do this as a Duke Records thing. And Duke Records was Bobby Blanton's label.
Mm-hmm.
And so that Duke Records sound is a certain sound. And he said, we got to do this at, like, Duke Records, because he heard it immediately and pinpointed it. And so we got the Texas horns, and we pulled in all the heavyweights that really know how to play that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The Texas Horns used to back up Doug Somm, of course, and Doug Somm was one of the guys I heard that actually could execute that sound live. I used to love to go see Doug Somm play. So those horns and George Raines on drums, and then Jimmy Vaughn on guitar. I only sing on this one. I don't play any guitar. So I just kind of like tell the story, and then the band just, I mean, it was so amazing. And that was, again, live in the studio. Those horns, we were all in one room with five horns,
wow,
organ and everything. Crazy. Yeah, it was really, really a special moment. And for me, too, it's a pinnacle moment for the record for me as well, because I haven't ever done anything quite like that musically. And it was so musical that I was like, wow, this is really a departure and definitely a lift.
Yeah,
in musicality.
Oh, it's one of those. It's a swooner, I call that. You know, it makes you just swoon, like whoa. You know, it when it's over, it's like wow. Play that again. Will somebody play that again?
Yeah.
You know, and it's something
thank
that
you. It's, I'm proud of it.
It's something you definitely hear on the old jukeboxes too. You know.
Yeah, and Mike Flanagan, you know, he called in those people. I mean, he was really specific about who he wanted on each tune. So it's not exactly the same musicians on every tune of the record. He wanted people for certain tunes, and this one he was very specific about who he brought in. I think he called it.
Yeah,
100% right.
I think you're right. Absolutely. Yeah, folks, you know, you've been hearing little snippets of each song right before we talk about it, but at the end of the show, I'm going to play this song in its entirety so you can get what I'm talking about.
Judge, Your Honor, hear my plea before you open up your court. Well, I don't want no sympathy. I went and cut my good man's throat. I caught him with a traveling Jane. I warned him twice before. I had my knife and I went insane. And the rest, you ought to know.
Alright, the next track I've seen you play live, and it's so much fun to see you play it, and it's an old, oh God, who did this track originally? Send Me to the Electric Chair. Who did this originally?
Well, the version I got was Betsy Smith.
Right.
I'm not sure if she did the exact original version or how far back this song goes, but that's the version I know, and that's from the 1920s.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty far back.
Mm-hmm.
It's been re-recorded many times by people.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think quite like this. I wanted to do it sort of like Elmore James meets Bessie Smith.
Yeah.
We have an electric band and a shuffle, and
yeah,
it's a little more open, and I'm doing some of those guitar stabs, you know, sort of like Elmore James. I don't play slide, but you'll hear some of that definitely in the shuffle beat where I'm going, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, you
know.
That's very up for Jamesy.
Yeah. And Derek O'Brien's on this one.
Derek, he's playing rhythm. He didn't even want to take a lead, or I would have given him one, but, Derek O'Brien's the best, one of the very best Texas blues guitar players in the world. Blues guitar players, I don't know what, he's just so great, and everything he does, he makes better. Every time if you bring Derek in, it gets better,
so
he did that to this session as well.
Yeah, and this was what, one or two takes on this one too?
Oh yeah, this is right up live, pretty much first take probably.
Yeah, super, and great vocal on here. You know, I really do.
Thank you.
I really do believe it when you say you cut his throat. I'm like, wow, she means it.
There you go.
Watch out for Sue.
Look out.
Wasn't what it could have been. It never was what it seemed. Now I mourn the death of a dream.
All right, next track is called Death of a Dream. And this is just you on guitar, upright bass, and J.J. Johnson on drums. It's a trio piece. Uh-huh. Really, really, it's so interesting. The tunes you chose for the record really do create a wonderful ebb and flow as you move through the record. So your sequence that you chose for this record really worked out really well. Tell me about this track.
Well, like you said, it was trio acoustic guitar, so my nylon string guitar, and that's besides my Fender Telecaster, I play nylon string, and I love that. I love the sound of it, and so I'm playing that, just mic'd. I wasn't through an amp or anything, and then upright bass. It was very organic, and then J.J. Johnson on drums, and it was live. It was one or second take. I mean, we just did it and kind of got into the vibe of it. I love the song. I love just the simplicity of it and the message of it.
Yeah.
I think the lyrics are great, and the performance is pretty much what was needed for that moment in time. It's very simple. Yeah.
Another cool progression too.
Thank you.
Yeah, I like that.
Kind of a classic progression.
Absolutely. When you guys, you know, since you were doing first takes and second takes and third takes, on a given day when you went into the studio, would you just work on one tune a day and then that would be it and off you'd go, you'd leave the room? Or would you work on multiple different tunes during the course of the day?
We only had 5 days of recording our track with the musicians. So we had to get 3 or 4 tunes a day.
Wow.
Yeah, because we had outtakes too. Tunes didn't make it on the record.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, we were recording at least 3 songs a day, maybe 4.
Wow. So you had musicians coming and going then?
Yeah, we usually have them in for a day at a time. Like, I think JJ and Chris Marsh came in and we cut 2 or 3 tracks with them. I mean, Gaslight was with JJ and we did Death of a Dream and another one with them. And then Chris Layton was in for 1 or 2 days. George Rains was in for 1 or 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
So 2 or 3 days, I can't remember.
How long was the average day?
Oh, long, yeah. 12 to 15 hours, I'm sure.
Holy cow.
Yeah, probably, I mean, with the musicians, maybe 8 hours, but we were in there longer.
Well, you're listening back and stuff, right?
Yeah, just pre-production and stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
It's you know, when you're renting studio time, you got to use it up. So usually at least 12-hour days.
Right. Thank you.
was a fast romance, just a lot of childish innocence. I found myself falling under your spell. When the music swelled, we started to dance.
All right, the next track is actually, there's a video attached to this one. It's called The Dance, and it's just you and your guitar.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's again my nylon string. It's a mix of flamenco styles with my right hand technique and the resquietos that I'm doing and some of those Latin influence runs and of course minor chords. So it's very influenced by Latin stylings.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't call it flamenco, but it's got some flamenco influence.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's very dramatic. So it's a lot of fun. I pull this off on live too, and it goes over really well. I really like playing it.
Yeah, another strong vocal too.
Thank you. Yeah.
And it's worked out great. It's got more of a, to me, it has more of a South American feel than it does a Mexico feel to it.
Yeah. It's probably almost a tango.
Yeah, I can see
it. In rhythm.
Yeah, for sure.
Maybe.
Absolutely.
Tango or rumba, I'm not sure what it is, but anyway, it's Latin-y. I don't really know.
Well, I'll try Cannonball one more time, but it's sticking. I can't guarantee anything. Washington. You can watch my jump.
And you round the record out with Cannonball Blues, and this is vocal and guitar again.
Another solo piece. I'm a huge fan of the Carter family, the early Carter family, and Maybelle Carter in particular. And
mm-hmm.
Always been fascinated by her and her history and her contributions to guitar and her style. And I love the music of the Carter family. I love the story behind the Carter family. It was really sort of an inspiration for me in this album, was going back to their music, reading about them for some reason. Mm-hmm. It kind of got inside me.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to pay tribute to that, and I love this song, and I love fingerpicking. So it's kind of a hybrid style I'm doing. I'm not doing the Carter scratch, Maybelle Carter's famous Carter scratch. I don't really do that, but I do a sort of a Piedmont style fingerpicking thing, and that's something I've been doing a long time. So you kind of hear that.
Right. So. With this record now, you're going back out. You're out on the road. You hit the road right after the record came out, right? Pretty much?
Yeah.
And
yeah, we've been back and forth and head to Europe at the end of the month now. We're in Houston in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
And then all over the rest of the, all over the place the rest of the summer.
Yeah. So, it's interesting. I know you live in several different places. Is it hard sometimes to figure out where's home, or are you pretty solid on that?
I'm pretty solid. I just moved to Austin, so I just took a place here, and yeah.
Oh, you're back in Austin.
I am back in Austin.
Oh, I did not know that, because last we talked, I think you were on the East Coast, right?
I was in Toronto from September, and then I planned to get back here in May, and I did. So now I'm here.
Well, welcome back.
There you go.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Something else I want to mention. I know that you and our good friend Michael Melinda over at Guitar Player Magazine.
Yeah.
You're doing something cool over there. Tell the folks about it. I love it.
Yeah. So years ago, I started interviewing other women guitar players. I was sort of curious about people's stories, and I ended up compiling more than 100 interviews with people from Bonnie Raitt to Jennifer Batten to Carole Kaye to all kinds of, you know, it's a huge list of women players, and I've got all these interviews kind of stockpiled away. And when Guitar Player did their feature on me, I proposed maybe a column. I said, you know, I've got all these interviews sitting here. How do you feel about maybe having a column? So they took it on, and now I have a monthly column in Guitar Player Magazine called The Foley Files, mm-hmm. which are excerpts from these interviews that I did. So each month, it's just, you know, it's just a little piece of the interview. It's not the whole interview, but it's pretty neat to be able to get them out to the world and get this stuff circulating finally.
That's super cool. I love that. And I know Michael and I have talked ad nauseum about, you know, how, you know, everybody's noticing that, you know, more women are starting to play guitar, you know, which is really exciting that anybody's picking up the instrument, because so few people are picking up the instrument now. But more women are picking up guitar now than men are.
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, and more women are going to college than men are also. I don't know if you know that.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, so it's yes, I think the tide is turning, and I think it's super. Mm. I think it's super cool, because I'm really looking forward to seeing what that creative byproduct is going to be from that. I think it's going to be very, very cool. And, you know, you and people like you are leading that front. It's super cool.
Well, thank you. Well, I'm happy to be a part of it, that's for sure. And Guitar Player is super, you know, they're just very supportive of what I'm doing. So, but yeah, I think if more women are playing the instrument, it's good for all of us.
Absolutely.
That's for sure.
Yeah. Certainly, certainly for people like Fender and Gibson, that's for sure.
Right.
So when does
we can all stay in business?
Yeah, everybody can stay in business. Me too. Otherwise, because if there ain't nobody playing, ain't nobody going to be listening to this.
That's right. But I still think we have an audience. Oh,
no.
I don't think guitar will go away.
Oh, no, I don't think so. I think, you know, people are always, you know, calling, you know, the death knell of this or that or the other thing, and I think it's doing just fine. I really do.
I still think there's nothing cooler, really.
No, there isn't.
The synthesizer is not as cool.
Yeah, no matter
or whatever people are playing now, a laptop. It's not exactly as cool.
Yeah, it doesn't look great on a
people
strap.
People are playing now. No. Not hot at all.
So when does the tour go up to? How far do you know, or is it endless road for you?
Well, it's an endless road right now. It's on and off. So, like I said, we start in Europe at the end of May, and then we'll be touring all through the fall.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And is it fair for me to ask whether or not there'll be another jungle show here in Austin?
Oh, I think there will be.
That's exciting.
Yes. I can't say for sure, but yes, I believe there will be.
I have been at every single one.
Wow.
Yes,
well,
I
that's
am.
Fantastic.
Me and the wife.
Well, it's a super fun time.
It really is. It's just great to see all those people up there doing what they do. And last time you had Charlie came up and did some Little Richard with you all, which was super cool.
Yeah.
That was great. He can definitely put that vocal out.
Yes. Yes.
That was super great.
It's great.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing you tomorrow night, tearing it up over at Sea Boys in Austin.
Thanks, Mark. And yeah, let me know when this is coming out. I'll make sure to plug it.
For sure. I will send you links and all that. Yeah, I'll send you links and all that good stuff. Sue, thanks so much for being on the show. This record is great, and everybody, y'all need to go out there and get it. Go to SueFoley.com to find out more about what's going on with Sue in regards to news and tour and all that stuff. She's on Facebook, she's on YouTube, she's on Instagram, and go see her if she comes to a town near you. The record you can go and download anywhere. Where can folks go? I imagine wherever there's hard copies being sold, you can get yourself a hard copy, certainly at Waterloo here in Austin.
And definitely right from me.
Okay, right through the website?
Shows.
Okay.
That's the best place.
And at
right
the shows.
From me at my shows.
Fantastic.
Come to the shows and meet me and get a CD. That's the best place to get it.
That's cool. Do that, folks. And we're going to head out, and on the way out, we're going to hear the whole track, If I Have Forsaken You, from the new record by Sue Foley, the Ice Queen. Sue, thanks so much again, and much success.
All right. Thanks, Mark. Thanks for having me on again, and we'll see you soon.
All right. Peace.
Bye.
Can you may the clouds run dry, let every drop of rain fall from the sky. If I
Guitar Radio Show on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, Instagram, and Tumblr, and of course, on guitarradioshow.com.